turn on our recording because everybody loves our podcast. Okay, nobody listens to podcasts, but okay. So why are you being served? So my story is 2003. I graduated from college, and I headed right for DC because I was going to be one of the major policy shapers in the new global economy. And I wasn't arrogant, you know. I was willing to take a job at a small think tank and work my way up to State Department, and I would take the ambassadorship of a small European nation by 30. But I soon learned that a four-year degree in liberal arts from a small upstate college means nothing. Absolutely nothing. Like, you name it, I'm unqualified for it. So I soon found myself working in this hardware store on Capitol Hill. And I admit I was a little embarrassed because here I am, you know, like the mind the size of a small planet, and I'm ringing up people's cleaning supplies and bags of cement. Like, I'm surely better than this. So I wasn't great at customer service at first. But the owner of the store, Ed Copenhaver, he was getting on in years, and he decided at some point he doesn't want to run a hardware store. He wants to work in a hardware store. So this is what he did. And Ed would stand, he had a little stool by the front door, and he would just sit there and wait for people to come in. And every time someone came in, he'd greet them with this great smile and this corny joke, and people would come in clutching parts of their washing machine or their faucet, crying a little. And Ed would speak to every single one of them like their problem was the most important problem he'd ever faced. And they would start coming back, and some of these people were just not nice and in a foul mood, and their house is probably flooded. But Ed just changed the whole tenor of the situation. And it came to be that hardware store, people loved going there. It wasn't a big box store, and it was definitely more expensive, but it was because of Ed. And I saw how he could change someone's day, and Ed really was making the world a better place just by being nice to people. And that's a lesson that I learned, and I think that I've taken that to every job I've ever had, and it's been a very valuable lesson. Learned to take pride in my work and just to be nice to people, because you don't know what they went through earlier that day, or you can really change their day just by helping. And Ed passed away a few years ago, and I saw the outpouring of support he got from the community. Everybody remembered that time Ed did that. And that's a guy who changed the world. It really is. And so I started thinking about the people who serve us every day here in Naples, like the person who rings us up, or the lady at the bank, or our teachers, or our lawyers, or our doctors. And sometimes customers are assholes. That's just the way it is. And when you're working, you can't tell them that. So I thought, hey, I'll put them on stage and let them. That'll be fun. And Karen said to me, well, just make sure it's not a bunch of people complaining. Although that could be kind of fun, too. So I invited kind of a diverse group of people from a different bunches of professions who work with different kinds of people and do it quite well. So first I'm going to invite somebody who is from this very theater. She's probably had some of your kids in some of her classes, and she also works, I see her everywhere. I think she has like most of the jobs in Naples. All right, so Kendall, come on up.
Hi, hello. Would you like me to start recording now?
Yes.
Sarah? Okay. Hi, so my name is Kendall. I'm sure most of you know me either from...
Sorry.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. So my name is Kendall. I'm sure most of you know me from Roots Cafe, or from before that, The Granary, or from before that, teaching some of your children in drama class, or from before that, in the box office here for 4 years. So since 2010, I've done basically nothing but customer service in Naples, almost exclusively. So I've got lots of stories. Some of them are really bad. Some of them are funny, some of them are really bizarre. For instance, one time this gentleman came in very angry, or I called him hangry. He was just fuming as soon as he walked in the door, and after his meal, he wanted to apologize for being so rude to me, but instead of actually using his words, he came up and he kissed me, and then he left. So that was weird. His wife was with him too. So And there's been times where people have brought me to tears and things along those lines, but I decided to go with a woman that I call Garlic Lady, who I had the pleasure of having her as a customer last summer. So she walked in the door, and you know it's going to be a bad table when they just walk in with a grumpy face, and he's like, oh great, this is what I get to deal with for the next 45 minutes to an hour and a half. So before I could even greet the table, say hello, introduce myself, she says to me, I smell garlic. What has garlic in it that I'm smelling? Anyone that's been to Roots, you all know that it's a very small kitchen and there's garlic in just about everything, so there's really no way to clearly identify where that smell could be coming from. And that's what I told her. I was like, there's garlic in the pasta, in the burgers, in the soup, in the stew. Everything has it. She's like, well, I want to know what I'm smelling. Okay, so I go into the kitchen and I look at the chef. I'm like, Evan, what are you cooking right now that has garlic in it? And then he looks at me, everything. So I go back out to appease her. And like, I asked the chef, and he said that everything has garlic in it, but on the stove right now, he's cooking some stew. So we went with that. And you know, her friends were visibly embarrassed already of her behavior, and that's another indicator that it's going to be a bad table. So after we figure out what she's smelling that has garlic in it, she orders the beef stew. And
the one that was cooking with garlic in it?
Yes, the one that had the garlic in it. And she's still pretty unsatisfied. And also, for anyone who's been to Roots, you know that it's sometimes in a mid-July night, it takes about 45 minutes to get your food out. Some people are more sympathetic to that. Garlic Lady was not. She was very, very unhappy with me, and all she did was complain. So time goes by, and I bring out the stew. There's not enough garlic in it, and she would like some garlic butter to go with her bun with the stew. And so that's not something we regularly have, just garlic butter. So I go into the kitchen like, Evan, I'm so sorry, but I really need some garlic butter. He's like, really? Now is when you need it? Unfortunately, yes. I didn't get that out fast enough. Of course not. So she begins to fuss. Trying to save this from being the worst table of the evening, I go back, I ask how everything is. Her girlfriends are having a great time, they're drinking wine, they're happy, enjoying themselves. She says, it's okay. Great, this is awesome. So my last attempt to save this table from being a complete disaster for everybody is I give her a discount, which is sometimes what we do if people are just really, really awful, which she kind of was. It wasn't much, but still enough, trying to apologize. Maybe that I did something wrong. I don't know. I don't ask questions. Just kill them with kindness is kind of what I've always tried to do. So now it's time to give the bills. She doesn't notice or care that I gave her a discount. It's like over her head. Doesn't even matter. So it's almost over. Getting the change, bringing it back to the table. I see the light at the end of the tunnel, and to my own fault, I gave her the wrong change. I was like, on top of everything else that had to happen, it had to be this lady at this table that I give the incorrect change to. So she yells at me about that. She looks at me, she says, Kendall, does this look like the right change to you? Oh, I'm so sorry. You know, I apologize, whatever. I offer a free dessert. She doesn't want it. You know, of course not. So the money's not important. She didn't really leave me a tip at all. It was like a dollar on a $45 bill, so that was unfortunate. But the money's not important. I tried to help her have a good experience so at least she'd come back and try us again. I don't think that ever happened. I've never seen her again. So she could have. It could have been a lot worse. She could have left me with nothing. She could have swore at me. She could have made me cry, which has definitely happened a number of times. So I'm thankful for that much. There are just something you kind of have to get used to in customer service and waitressing or wherever you're talking on the phone to people, that some people just can't be pleased. And you kind of have to live with that and just move on it, and you can't get hung up on it because that's bad news. So having these rotten customers every now and then makes me really appreciate the people who do come in to Roots or to BVT or to wherever that are there to support local businesses, to enjoy the atmosphere, enjoy the people who come back time and time again, even though it's a 45-minute wait for food, even though they didn't get the seats that they wanted to, they're still here because they still love it. So those are the customers that I do this work for and that make my jobs, plural, really awesome. So let's see here. I suppose that the point of all of this would be that everything that I do, we do as people, is a learning experience. So bad things happen, and I always use that as an opportunity to learn from it and not make that same mistake and do better next time. And the same thing goes when something good happens. You know, you're always learning from whatever is going on in your life. So I suppose I would like to say thank you, Garlic Lady, for not making me cry and teaching me to have a genuine appreciation for the people that make my job awesome, which is a lot of you. So thank you, guys.
Thanks, Kendall. I like going to Roots and getting you as my server. You're awesome. I've never waitressed because I'm mean and I fall a lot, so that is not the right profession for me. Okay, these are from the audience, and I ask you guys crazy things customers or clients had done to you. I was in the middle of Eastview Mall with my brother, and people kept coming up to us and asking if we worked there. One lady started feeling my brother's shirt and said, "Oh, I'm sorry, I thought you were a dummy." And I just, said, "Yes, he is a dummy." Okay, I had two Bolshevik-trained Russian dancers go across the border into Canada, and I had to go try and bring them back. Where the hell do you work?
I have 25 of
them. Okay. He called on a Good Friday wanting to pick his erectile dysfunction medicine up right away. We didn't have it, so I said he'd have to wait until Monday or Tuesday. And he said, "But I have a date on Easter Sunday." Can you say resurrection? Very cute. And I said it was okay to bring kids. Okay, next up, we have somebody who we also know from a lot of places around town. Right now, we know her from the dungeon, where she makes it fun. Any of you been to Open Closet? It's always fun to go and try on clothes with Courtney. And she's also a famous comedian who recently auditioned for America's Got Talent, which she totally has talent. I've seen her perform at open mics, and I think that Courtney will be really awesome. So come on up, Court.
Hi, my name's Courtney. I forgot my sunglasses. So I'm a talk like this. So yeah. Okay. Better idea. Okie dokie. So, yeah, I'm Courtney, and I was figuring I'd kick this off with a poem by the rhyme master himself, Dr. Seuss. I love my job. I love the pay. I say it more and more each day. I love my office and its location. I hate to have to go on vacation. I love my furniture, drab and gray, and piles of paper that grow each day. I think my job is really swell. There's nothing else I love so well. I'm happy to be here. I am, I am. I'm the happiest slave of the firm, I am. I love my job. I'll say it again. I even love those friendly men. Those friendly men that have come today in clean white coats to take me away. Hold up, I ain't done yet. I ain't even told you about the job I love. Or loved. Past tense. So, like, you probably know me from the Dollar General, and I worked there for about a year and a half, almost 2 years, and I worked even when I was sick, and I came in, like, whenever they called me, and then they fired me for no reason, and I was pretty hot about it for a while, but it's like, you know what? They had to cut hours somewhere in the schedule, and if they had to get rid of somebody, I'm glad it was me, because I get money on the side for my brain injury, which has no effect on my life whatsoever. And I'm just glad they didn't get rid of somebody who needed that job. And I was gonna get mad and go to court about it and, like, sue their ever-loving beep. But I figured, you know, the manager down there, she has 5 kids. And, you know, most of the people there had kids. So, if they're going to get rid of somebody, get rid of me. Because I don't have kids, I don't have any dependents besides my cat. And she's spoiled, rotten. And yeah. And
well, we miss you there, Courtney.
Yeah. I know. I miss being at the register, but I found, like, working, like, at a register, you want to wear good shoes. Because you're standing there forever, and like, these shoes I got now are that New Balance, and I have really old school Balance, I guess. As you can see with the stairs. And I had something else I wanted to talk about, but guess I got a little bit of stage fright. I blame the lights. I remember when I was little, like, customer service wise, I don't know if the receptionist at the hospital would be considered customer service, but I would have to call the hospital because that's where my mom worked. And the receptionist would answer, and I'd be like, "Hello, is Judith Irwin available?" And they're like, "I'm sorry, what?" And I'd say it again, and they're like, "I'm sorry, I can't understand you." And hang up on me. It's like, "Hello? This is a hospital. If somebody calls and you cannot understand them, you track that call and you send an ambulance. you know, I'm not a genius, I'm just a kid, but, you know, that would strike me as kind of obvious. But a lot of things strike me as obvious, and I suppose that's why I got fired. Yeah. I remember one time at work I got a write-up because I was talking to the bread delivery guy. Me and him had a thing going on. But I was talking to him about the recent Christmas present I bought for myself, and I named him Dr. Juan. He was a vibrator. But, you know, if you put one of those fuzzy socks on, he turned into a great masseuse for, like, sore and achy muscles. So it tied into working at the register great. But, yeah. I told the bread guy that Dr. Juan had nothing on him. And, yeah. Yep. I think that's about it.
Courtney, you can only take her someplace twice, and the second time is to apologize. That was really cool, Court. Okay, I was working at Lollipop Farm, and a man bought a pet raccoon to be adopted. And he said, "He's a great pet," I was told. The raccoon immediately jumped on me and climbed up and bit me on the head. Craziest request you ever got from a customer or client. What did you do before you were born? Probably nothing. A lady bought some pantyhose at Preston's IGA and put them on in the canned goods aisle. When you gotta run, you gotta run. I don't know. Okay, they took the label off a product and hoped to pay less for it. Sneaky. Okay, so this is a little stretch on customer service, but I've been wanting to get the speaker for a while, and he is a teacher. And teaching is so much customer service because you're dealing with administrators and politics and parents who think their children are perfect in every way, and you have to be like, yeah, no. And also you're training the next generation of servers and those who how to treat customer service people and how to treat everyone. So it's so about customer service in every single way. So Tad, come on up. Tell us what you do.
Well, Courtney, I don't think I'm going to top what you said. So, customer service, as we all know, is about pleasing the customer. My initial thoughts of customer service is portraying somebody saying thank you as they depart from the store and they're eagerly awaiting to open up their package. And they get home and they're looking at it and they're getting their knife out, their scissors out, and they cut it open and they say, "Oh shit, made in China." They're not happy. I deal with those kids on a regular basis. So, I teach. I'm in customer service. My job is to satisfy the customers. And the customers are the kids and the parents. And in essence, I'm a second parent, or should I say, a Dutch uncle, or a favorite uncle, or an aide, an attorney, an authority, a backseat driver, a Budinsky, a clubhouse lawyer, a coach, a confidant, a consultant, a counsel, a counselor, a director, a doctor, a don, an educationist, an educator, an expert. Some parents wouldn't call me that. A friend, a guide, a guru, a helper, an instructor, a judge, a kibitzer, a lawyer, a lecturer, a master, a mentor, a meddler, a monitor, a partner, a preceptor, a priest, a professor, a quarterback, a referee every day, a right-hand person, a school marm, no, a second guesser, a trainer, a teacher, and a tutor. So I originally went into teaching because I thought I wanted to help people, and I thought I could do it. I wanted to teach, I wanted to share knowledge, I wanted to help students grow, to acquire wisdom, and all that good stuff. So within the last few years, I realized that teaching is not that. Teaching is not teaching. I seem to simply be spewing material and hoping some gets stuck. Come on, why don't you understand that? You got to understand that. It's right there on the paper. Can't you get that? You don't get that? I found myself saying that way too much. And I felt like I was hurting my students and I was hurting myself because I was pretty much lying to myself and my students that, why don't you understand what is right there on the paper? Well, then what the heck? Why do they need me? They don't need me if they can look what's on the paper and understand it. So, looking back, I never really understood teaching, quote unquote, until recently. Every day I nurture, I care, I console, and I listen to individuals. Listening is probably the hardest thing as a teacher. Because what we think as being a teacher is front and center. We are up here to talk to you as students, and you should understand, and you should get it, and you should be mindful of all the rules and the regulations of this classroom and this school, and that's not really what we as teachers should be doing. We should be listening more, more nurturing, more caring, more consoling. Whoa. So, this wasn't for prettiness. So each day, I check for bugs. Make sure the leaves are healthy. There's a dead one. Pull that one off. Maybe a branch needs tying up. This little guy, gotta get him up here. Hopefully he'll stay. Maybe his friends will help him. God damn it, stay. Get in your seat. And of course, I have a watering can and I need to water them every day. I check the soil to see if it's dry. As the plant gets bigger, maybe I gotta pull dead leaves. Well, I'm a gardener, really. I grow people. That's what I do. My customer service to me means that I'm there for my students to help them grow as individuals. And when I recently realized that, I think what happened was I felt myself thinking back to the real reason why I went into teaching. And I never could define it until now. I never could define that until now. I have allergies and they're killing me, so sorry. So students need a place where they need to be watered every day. They need to be taken care of. They need to have their branches tied up. They need to have the dead leaves taken off them. They need to be welcomed into the classroom. They need to want to enter the classroom. They need to want to enter that door and know that they're going to get taken care of. Know that they're going to be trusted. And know that they're going to be loved and helped and shown and listened to. So, picking off the dead leaves. Sometimes my customers have no interest in what I'm selling. However, what I realized is that I'm supposed to be guiding young people to learn, yearn for knowledge. And propping up the branches, the limp branches. I'm picking those kids up by their bootstraps. Come on, let's go. You know, I watched a video about this inspirational math teacher. And he said, can you all recall a time when you had this favorite book, song, movie that you really, really liked, and then you went to tell your friend that you really liked, and you said, you gotta check it out. And they went and checked it out, and they came back, and they hated it. That's what I spend every day doing. This is still this guy's quote. I love it. I sell a product to a market that doesn't want it, that's forced by law to buy it. So I'm going to leave you with this thing that I try to help my students get maybe one or two a week. It's a quote, usually an inspirational quote. Luck is what happens when preparation meets opportunity. Thank you. Oh my gosh, I forgot. Can I share
this? Oh yeah.
Yes, I forgot these. So, my students, who are ever so nice to me, yeah right, oh thank you. I asked them the other day, I said, if you wanna come, you can come, you're welcome to come. I'm not paying your way though. They said that's bullshit. So this is from a young lady, and I'm not going to say the names, but this is what she wrote. In Mr. Snaith's room, it's a happy place to be. He's an outgoing person because he's helped me understanding schoolwork, family issues, and friendships. But in the last 2 years, I've been in his algebra math class. He brings so much excitement to us. When we walk in the door, and if he sees us having a bad day, morning, he usually asks us if we are okay, and we answer him, and then throughout the 41 minutes we have him, he's always trying to make us smile. Does that sound familiar, girls? Dad, will you stop it? He taught me so many life lessons and math lessons for the near future. I really don't know how many math lessons, but definitely life lessons. There are the reasons that I love being in his class. There's one. I'm going to read, I got a few, so won't read them all, but Mr. Snaith helps us if we have drama. Oh, God. 15-year-old girl with other 15-year-old girls. And I'm a male teacher. It's tough, but I try my damnedest. I tell them, I say, leave the drama at the door. Try it again. Go back out the door. Come back in. Leave the drama. And they'll come. They'll go outside. And they'll come back in. Okay, I'm ready. You obviously didn't get what I was saying to you. He tries to cheer us up, and he does a pretty okay job at it. I shouldn't have read that one. yeah. No, it was something about inequalities and, you know, solving for X, and you don't want to hear that crap, do you? And this is the last one. What does it mean to be in this specific classroom is freedom. Mr. Snaith will help me out if I have a situation going on. I like him. He understands me on what's happening. Mr. Snaith has helped me out over the last 3 years that I've been in his class. I don't know if I taught her math that well. He makes me understand a lot of things when I don't particularly know. He helps me understand my homework. I got to teach her to write better. What does it mean to be Mr. Snaith's student that I like being is his being his student because he gives hope and faith into me when I struggle on other work. Mr. Snaith has taught me a lot over the 3 years that I've been in his class. Well, thank you. So that's my story of customer service. Thank you. Now I'm done.
It's a great story.
Back,
when I asked him, he's like, is that customer service? And I'm like, yeah, your customers are like small and illiterate and angry. It's hard. It's a very tough job. Like, I love my job, but I think it would be a lot easier if it weren't for clients. Okay. The crazier's request was to take one of our sculptural art glass pieces that was sandblasted with a hand-painted enamel design to be repaired when it was shattered. Like I would have magical power for this sort of repair. I worked in an Italian restaurant, and a customer asked if I could do anything to get rid of the smell of food in there. I'm a special ed teacher, and I was doing flashcards with basic survival words with the kids. One girl asked me rather angrily, "Who made these cards?" I told her I did, and she said, "You're so stupid. You made the word big little and the word little big." Like, duh. The Pepsi was too bubbly. They requested I get them a soda that had less bubbles. Okay. All right, next up, we have everybody's favorite purple-haired pastor. I got to know Linda over the last few years, and she is a kind and compassionate person, and she's soon not to be our pastor anymore, but as I don't really know her from a pastor, I know her as a friend. I'm not losing anything, you guys are. So, Linda, are you ready to talk?
I'm ready.
Okay.
I'm always ready to talk.
Always ready to talk, I know this about you.
Yeah. I've learned from Courtney.
Oh, good.
I'm not going up those stairs. When she said, "I'm ready to talk," there's a saying in the Methodist church that a Methodist pastor has to be ready to preach, pray, or die at a moment's notice.
When you talk about customer service in relation to a pastor, there are two diverse markets that we're dealing with. The first is the market within the congregation, and the second is the market outside the congregation. Now, those have two entirely different set of criteria. Working within the congregation is very much like herding Republican congressional representatives to come up to 216 votes. It can't be done. And I think that Paul Ryan discovered what I discovered many, many years ago. And that is, when one person comes to you and says, "I have a concern," and they share what the concern is, if you try to do something to assuage that concern, the minute that you do it, somebody else is going to come to you and say, "I have a concern. You changed something." And it was what you did to make the first person happy. So when you make one person happy, you make the other person unhappy. Best example I can give you of this was, I was in a very extraordinary church in Maine. Now, there are a lot of churches in Maine where there are two churches that share a pastor, because if the population decreased, they don't have the funds to have a full-time pastor, and so they will share one with the nearest congregation. But this wasn't that situation. There were two churches in the one town. It began way back when the paper mill was built in that town, and the owner of the paper mill donated the land right next to his mansion for a Methodist church, because you see, the mill owner was Methodist. And so, with the mill owner being Methodist, and they built the Methodist church right next door to his house, anyone who was in middle management in the mill came to the Methodist church. All the workers lived in brick row housing, and some of them also came to the Methodist church, but they were kept in the back of the church. And as time grew and developed, some of these workers began to move out of row housing and buy single-family homes in an area of town that was called Virginia, because it was named after the Virgin Family Farm. And so when they did this, the people at the downtown church had a brilliant idea. Let's build a chapel up there in Virginia, and we can have all those nasty mill workers go to church up there, and they won't be dirtying up our church anymore. I'm implying this conversation. I was not there to witness it. And we will send our pastor up there first thing, and he can practice his sermon. It was always seen, by the way. He can practice his sermon up there, and then we'll get a better product when he comes down here. Oh, and by the way, when he takes up the collection up there, he'll bring that back down here, too. So all the control and everything else stayed in the downtown church. By the time I got there, the downtown church was down to about 15 people in worship. Now, this was a big church. Sanctuary seating 250 people, a side overflow room that seated 100, a dining room that sat 150 people for meals, a second floor with a full basketball court, a full stage, and 12 Sunday school rooms. And it was all in one heating zone. We could not restructure the heating zone because everything was covered with asbestos. And so to have worship for 15 people, we were heating this huge building. And so we came to a point where we said we had to make a decision about whether we're going to close the downtown street building. By this point, we were having 50 people up at the chapel, but 15 downtown. And one person would come to me and say, "If you close that church, I'm never coming back again." Okay? And then someone else would come and say, "If you don't close that church, I'm never coming back again." We ended up closing that church. Some people didn't come back again, some did. But you can't always have it the way you want. compromise has to be a way of life. And that's one of the things that I try to do, is to help get people to see a route toward compromise. But it doesn't work when half of the congregation wants all praise songs and the other half of the congregation wants all traditional pipe organ music. It doesn't work when half of the congregation wants no children in worship because it makes it noisy and hard to hear, and the rest of the congregation wants kids in worship because they want to see what's happening with their children. You can't bring those two opposites together. So, hurting Republicans is what it's like within the congregation. It's a whole different thing when you're talking about that market that's outside the church. And I say market, not in the sense of I'm trying to market the church to them, but in the sense that they will often come to the church for a particular reason. Now, let me ask you this. If you were going to go buy a vacuum cleaner, you would probably, I'm assuming, do some research on different brands of vacuum cleaners first and get some basic information on, you know, okay, a Dyson is $500, I don't want to go that high, you know, different price ranges, and say, well, I'm willing to compromise in the quality for not only pay $500. People who come to the church don't do that kind of research. They have no clue what goes into what they're asking for. And they have no clue that they should. They think that coming to the church and asking for a particular thing is like going to Walmart, grabbing the first customer service person that they see, and say, tell me which aisle baptisms are in. Tell me which aisle I can find a wedding. Those are the two big ones. And I have two stories to share with you in relation to that. It was Easter Sunday morning. I had just gotten back from the sunrise service. There was a breakfast going on in the fellowship hall. And I'd come down to my office to get a few moments of quiet before the first of two main services that morning. The phone rang. I picked up the phone, and a voice said, is your pastor around? I said, I am the pastor. Oh, I'm sorry, you sounded like a woman. I am. Really? Oh. Well, I wanted to know if we could get our five kids done today. Excuse me? What do you mean, done? You know, whatever you're supposed to do with them when they're little? Put a diaper on them? Excuse me, are you talking about baptism? That's the word! Yeah, can we get them baptized today? I said, today. Why would you want it today? Well, because the whole family's coming in for dinner, and I thought that would make the party afterwards easier. I'm already cooking the dinner. By the way, do I have to be there? Needless to say, we did not do that baptism.
What did you do with the parents?
Luckily, I was never able to identify them. Now, I explained very, very gently, I thought, that every congregation has rules about administering baptism, and that the first rule we have is that generally the family needs to be part of the congregation, because during the baptismal service the parents make promises to raise the child in that congregation. Kind of hard to do if you've never stepped into the church before. So she was astounded at that. It just never crossed her mind that there should be some requirements. Same thing with weddings. The same church that I'm talking about now, by the way, none of my stories relate to Trinity. There is a pastoral rule. You can only tell stories about a congregation once you have left it.
I was the same, but you're retired.
I'm retired, but I haven't left Trinity yet, so I can't tell Trinity stories till I'm gone.
So another series next week?
Yeah, we'll be there.
I don't know what town I'm moving to. I've resigned it effective July 1st. Because it's a bit much for me as a retiree and coping with some disability issues and some health issues. So I do not have to move out of Naples, but I haven't found a place to live in Naples. So I am looking. So when I find a place, I will let you know. Pushy, aren't they? Okay, same church, weddings. Woman calls me up and she says, "Hi, I'm like getting married on like April 29th. And like we want to have it at that church, so would you please put it on your calendar, please?" And I said, "Well, first you need to come in and talk to the pastor about the wedding and, you know, there's some requirements that we have prior to the..." "Oh, we don't need the pastor. We're bringing in a judge to do it." "You're bringing in a judge to do it?" "Yeah, see, my fiancé, he doesn't like religious stuff. So we wanted to have a judge do it." "Then why would you want to have it in a church?" "Because the grounds are so pretty. The photographs afterward would be just fantastic." We didn't do that wedding either. I wish I could get people to understand that the things that happen within a church are meant to be communal events. And so it's not like walking into Walmart and picking up a deck of cards or a new Dutch oven. It's a matter of being part of the community and taking part of the rituals that accompany the changing phases of your life as you grow in that community. Not all the stuff that happens in a church is fun. A few weeks ago, I spent a lot of hours up at Strong with a family that you guys know well. And all I had to offer them was prayers. And the prayers didn't work. Because Maddie didn't come back. And I did what was, I think, the hardest thing that I've ever done in 40 years of ministry. I walked with them into that room, and we prayed together, and then I took the oil that I always have with me for anointing, and I made the sign of the cross on Maddie's forehead, and I said, "Maddie, when you were baptized, some pastor back then made the sign of the cross on your forehead, and it was a sign of us receiving you from God. Today I make it again as a sign of us sending you back." Not everything's fun. But when a family lets you walk that journey with them, when a family shares their anger and their confusion, even their anger at God, because boy, I told them to. Yell at God, God can take it. when they share that with you, that is an incredible amount of trust. And that trust is a gift. And I will put up with a multitude of weird weddings and strange requests for baptisms for those few infrequent moments when I can walk that journey with someone who's really serious.
Okay, I'll just stay down here because it's here. Tad and Courtney and Linda and Kendall, thank you for sharing your stories. I know getting up here and talking sometimes can be a little nerve-wracking, but it really is a gift to share something personal about yourself. And I think that's the best thing about Naples. We keep talking. We never stop. So. And thank you to everybody who does customer service out there, no matter what you do, if you're dealing with the public. That's, again, making our town better, because we all appreciate you every day. And so, keeping nice to each other, keep talking, and thank you for coming. I think we're done here. Alex.
Courtney, I learned things about you I never learned in church.
Yeah. Good thing.
It's definitely a good thing.